Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
It's Wednesday, September 11th, 2013, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are Missouri School of Journalism colleagues Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, President Barack Obama, speaking directly to the American people last night, acknowledging there's been progress using diplomacy to control the situation in Syria. The president backed down a bit from his original stance on military strikes, saying he's willing to wait until the United Nations returns its report on last month's alleged sarin gas attacks. Monday, the president sat down with six major television news networks, granting one-on-one interviews with NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, Fox, and PBS. It's who he didn't talk to, though, that's raising some eyebrows. Both Al Jazeera and Univision openly critical of the president for what they both saw as a snub. Sunday, it was Syrian President Bashar al-Assad getting airtime on American TVs. Charlie Rose, who hosts CBS This Morning and The Charlie Rose Show on PBS, conducted a taped one-hour sit-down interview in Damascus. It was the first interview Assad gave to an American journalist in more than 2 years. How big of a get was it for Rose? I'll ask our panelists. And just what do the American people think about all of this? Facebook and NBC News released data analyzing what users are posting, linking to and liking, leading to some interesting conclusions. And Jimmy Kimmel chides the news media, pulling one heck of a hoax, staging the production of a video that went viral of a woman twerking, you know, that dance Miley Cyrus did at the VMAs, setting herself on fire. We'll get into the hoax and Kimmel's surprise at how easily it ended up on news broadcasts. There's a lot more that we'll hopefully get to as well, but let's start with last night's speech about Syria. All of the networks carried President Barack Obama's address to the American people live. During his 15-minute remarks, the president said he long resisted calls for military strikes in Syria until he was presented with evidence Bashar al-Assad's government gassed its own citizens. Obama pledged not to deploy any ground troops or wage a prolonged air campaign against Syria, but that he wants the military to maintain its current posture should diplomatic efforts currently underway fail. He also tried to appeal to the nation's emotional sense of American exceptionalism.
America's not the world's policeman. Terrible things happen across the globe, and it is beyond our means to right every wrong. But when, with modest effort and risk, we can stop children from being gassed to death and thereby make our own children safer over the long run, I believe we should act. That's what makes America different. That's what makes us exceptional.
So let me ask, this was Obama's chance to take his case, make it to the American people, make that appeal to them. Do you think that he did that?
Well, I know it was his opportunity to give his side to the American people of what he thinks. I'm not so sure he made the case enough for the American public, the perception that the American public has that we should not be involved in Syria or any place else. I don't think he made the case there. I think they were just the American public is just so fed up with war that it doesn't matter whether it's in Syria or somewhere else. If we haven't been directly impacted, if there's not a direct military action against us, it's going to be difficult for this president or any other in the near future to be able to get their backing to do something.
Yeah, and I think the media invest a lot of attention and importance in these presidential speeches, thinking that they're going to, as they keep saying, move the dial. President Obama, whether you like his strategy or not, at least he gave a clear coherent response, maybe based on all the product tested different messages they've been floating over the past week or so. But it was a clear, concise message about why he wanted to do what he wanted to do. But, you know, again, as Ernest said, the American public is so tired. So tired. I don't think anything could have, if the videos showing these kids and mothers being gassed and convulsing or lying dead in these shrouds is not going to convince us that we have an interest in intervening, nothing the president's going to say is going to make any difference.
Yeah, and I think what the media has been trying to do, and I think in some ways it's doing an effective job under extraordinary circumstances, is to provide as much fact-based information as they can on both sides. And I just think it's just going to be very difficult for the president or any other politician to convince them that we need to be involved in this.
I do think there's one way in which the media have generally added some real value to this conversation since, Putin brings forth his plan for inspectors to go in and Syria claims it's going to give up its weapons, its chemical weapons. The media have done a great job in the past 24 to 48 hours of describing just how difficult a process that's going to be. Basically calling out, oh, if they say it, it'll happen. It's going to take months, thousands of people, troops, boots on the ground to be able to guard any inspectors that go in there. I mean, the whole process, if it happens at all, is going to take a long time and it's going to be very dangerous and difficult.
I think one of the other things that the coverage has done is to focus the American public on an international crisis and how expansive that crisis can be, because not only are you talking about Syria, but now you brought Russia into the mix. You're talking about Iran again, China, which has always been Israel. A threat. China, Israel. Yeah. So now the American public is in a lot of ways being educated on the fact that even though we're half a world away, it still matters what goes on in other parts of the world and the impact that it can have on the United States.
So Monday, one of the things that happened is we're talking about the coverage and making sure those facts are getting to people. The president sat down with reporters from six major networks, giving each of them a one-on-one interview specifically on this topic. The media blitz was well orchestrated, with the reporters gathering at the White House and even taking this picture, initially tweeted by Wolf Blitzer. In it, you see PBS's Gwen Ifill and Scott Pelley from CBS off on the left. That's Fox's Chris Wallace in the center. And Wolf Blitzer is on the right with his arms around ABC's Diane Sawyer and Savannah Guthrie. Staunch competitors appear standing together, all smiles and chummy as they commemorated the moment. There were some other national news organizations, though, that were left out of this media blitz, and they weren't about to stay silent about what they saw as a pretty big slight. Al Jazeera's senior political analyst pointed out in an editorial on the network's website that it is the only one to reach Muslims and Arabs in the greater Middle East, and that speaking to Al Jazeera's Arabic and English-speaking networks is paramount to the situation in Syria. And what might be seen as an even more auspicious snub, the Obama administration also chose to shut out Spanish language network Univision. Now, we don't know exactly how the networks were selected for these interviews, but would you agree with folks from Al Jazeera and Univision that they made a mistake by not sitting down and talking to them too?
Yeah, I mean, they usually pick the same big six, the public media and then all of the other broadcast television networks and cable channels. So this is kind of standard par for the course stuff. I'm a little bit more confused as to why they wouldn't have gone with Univision, add one more, because clearly not only is that a sizable portion of the U.S. population, but part of Obama's coalition. And after all, this message was aimed at Americans, not at Arabs or other people living around the world. They're going to get that coverage if they want. Al Jazeera, as much as I have said in the past few weeks how much I like Al Jazeera America, like 20 to 40,000 people a night total are watching that right now. So I can see why the White House didn't give them.
I kind of think that may have been Al Jazeera saying, hi, we're still here. Don't forget about us. We're the new people on the block. Come talk to us, too.
I think that's exactly the way Al Jazeera was looking at it. They're going to, we need some credibility, and this would have given us some credibility, and you left us out. I agree with Mike. I have no idea why the White House decided not to invite Univision. I mean, that is a huge market that voted overwhelmingly for the president and is really trying to help him in pushing his immigration policy and other and his healthcare policy.
And a year ago at this time, he did go to Univision on more than one occasion to court that Latino vote. And that's one of the reasons that Univision employees who came out and spoke against this felt that the slight was as big as it was. You knew where to find us when you needed something from us. Why aren't you talking with us now?
Right. And I don't know if it's someone in the White House just not thinking that the Hispanic population or the Hispanic population that watches Univision on a daily basis, on a nightly basis, is not relevant in this conversation. That's a huge mistake.
I also think that photo that you showed of all of the correspondents, all very chummy. I'm kind of surprised that President Obama, there wasn't a picture of him in the middle of all of them. But it kind of shows the distance between television news anchors and the public that they're serving when they're all dressed up and chummy in the White House and oftentimes with these big political figures. None of the rest of us are in that situation. And you wonder sometimes if the White House isn't very skillfully manipulating those media so that they will frame the story in the way that the White House wants
them
to.
So let me ask you this, because you're talking about it being a very friendly situation and that relationship that can be forged between the White House and those correspondents. So if you're somebody from Univision or from Al Jazeera that is complaining about having been left out, do you risk becoming a target in the future for the administration to continue to shun?
I don't necessarily think so, because if you go back, and I'm sure Mike can remember this, Fox found itself in that same situation when it was a fledgling network and you only had ABC, NBC, and CBS, and Fox News and CNN, and Fox News was trying to get in, and those were the ones who were called and Fox News was left out. So, you know, this could be one of those situations where the next time something like this comes up, you best believe that Univision is going to get a call.
And it's all very targeted. I mean, the White House has not responded to requests from Fox News Sunday to have, you know, the president or people on for many, many, many months. And yet in this particular instance, the president needs to reach those conservatives who might call on Congress to support his initiatives as much as he needs the liberals to do that.
Well, these guys were talking about not talking to Obama, Charlie Rose was on an airplane on his way to Damascus. This weekend, he sat down and talked frankly and openly with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. It was the first time Assad spoke with an American reporter in more than 2 years. The interview was conducted entirely in English, and in it, Assad refuted the evidence the Obama administration says it has that he authorized a gas attack.
The question remains, what can you say to the president who believes chemical weapons were used and were used by your government, that this will not happen again?
I will tell him very simply, present what you have as evidence to the public. Be transparent.
If he presents that evidence.
This is where you can discuss the evidence, but he doesn't have. He didn't present it because he doesn't have. Kerry doesn't have. No one in your administration have. If they had it, they would have presented it to you as media for the first day.
They have presented it to the Congress.
Nothing.
They
Nothing
have shown
presented.
The Congress what they have and the evidence they have from satellites, intercepted messages, and the like.
Nothing presented. Nothing has been presented so far.
So Rose continues, and it gets a little bit more heated as they continue to challenge each other back and forth on what has or hasn't been presented. If you haven't seen this in full yet, you can on our links blog and see more of that discussion. How much do you think that the timing of this interview and its release, with some parts of it very early Monday morning on CBS this morning and then late in the evening on PBS, how much do you think it may have had an impact on the diplomatic breakthroughs?
Well, I think the diplomatic, at least from what we're hearing after the president's speech last night, the diplomatic breakthroughs were happening as this interview was going on. And I think it's one of those things where President Assad may be in a situation where I've got to back away from this. I'm going to have to rely on the Russians to sort of help negotiate this thing through. And at this particular point, how the media plays out in this, it's one side, the other side, this complex situation, that complex situation. Everything is in flux right now, and it's going to be very difficult for the media to show all sides of this in a way that's going to be beneficial for anybody.
I mean, I doubt that what Assad said to Charlie Rose had any impact on the Russians trying to come up with this plan. In fact, I think that sort of late diplomatic decision overwhelmed or swamped the value of the interview for Charlie Rose. It was a good get. I mean, first of all, I mean, Assad just lies. I mean, he's told people he doesn't have chemical weapons.
And now all of a sudden,
you're coming to between last night and today.
Right. So, but still, it's good to get, you know, liars, opponents, enemies on the record. And so it could have been a great get, but just the news of the day overwhelmed the significance of that interview.
Yeah, and I think when you go back and you look at this, it's going to prove the way Mike said. It was a good opportunity that CBS was able to get. And in the end, it's probably going to work out well for them. Just like when CNN was able to have the access it had during the war in Iraq. You're going to see that from an historical perspective, you're going to see that somewhere down the road. But I think Mike is right in terms of the fact that everything was happening while this interview was going on. So the other news, the fact that the Russians had decided to come in and actually be a big diplomatic player, overshadowed this interview.
An NBC Wall Street Journal poll taken before Obama's address last night showed 60% of people wanted their congressman to vote against military force. Only 24% said they felt taking action was in America's best interest. That poll and others conducted by the Associated Press and CNN were done using scientific methods. Representative samples were taken and margins of error were calculated. But there's other data floating out there too, anecdotal data. Facebook is working with NBC, it says, to integrate and measure global conversations on the network, calling it a virtual town hall. It aggregated data anonymously by gender, age, and location. You can go to our links blog to see how it all breaks down, but I'll give you some of the highlights. Men, it seems, are talking about Syria at about twice the rate of women. Within the United States, most mentions are coming out of the District of Columbia, followed by New Jersey. And between August 31st and September 6th, last Friday, there were 6.4 million mentions of Syria in the U.S. Now, that is about half as many as there were about football and 200,000 less than there were about Miley Cyrus. What kind of information does this tell us?
Well, first of all, anytime you do something that is less than rigorously scientific, whether it's, you know, what Facebook was doing or last night when CNN was doing an instant poll of people who watched it. I mean, we have to couch those in language that makes it clear to the audience what we're doing there. But at least for once, I like the fact that whether it was a scientific public opinion poll or one of these social mediated polls, we were talking about something substantive at a time when the opinion of the American public actually matters, rather than being this process-oriented crap that we hear during political campaigns for the most part.
Yeah, I really like the fact that now you're starting to news media and the media organizations are starting to incorporate social media into something of actual substance. And this is an issue that Americans are talking about. Now, they may not be talking about it at the rate that they were talking about football on Sunday and Saturday or Miley Cyrus last week, but at least they're talking about it. And that's a far cry from what we normally get, where the public is tuned out to these international incidents, and we just don't know what they're thinking about.
Well, most of those posts that are on Facebook are opinion and reaction, not the types of firsthand accounts of what's happening on the ground. Last week, we talked about how difficult it is to verify those. Well, there's a company based in Britain that's partnering with news agencies to do just that. Mike, tell us about Storyful.
Well, basically, among other things, they do what you said. They are gathering all of this other media, videos from YouTube and other sources, and they are doing the hard legwork that needs to be done to compare the images on the video to what is known, to geolocation, to time of day, and lots of other data that they have available to them so that they can at least come to some more confident conclusion about whether this is probably a real video as opposed to a doctored video. Now, should this be something that news organizations with resources like the TV networks, like the New York Times, the Washington Post do themselves? Maybe they are doing some of it themselves, but I think there's real value in having a company that is trusted by the media who has the technology and the time to do that. Good for us. I mean, sometimes we really can't tell, and even Storyful can't always tell, but at least they have the tools to make it possible with some of these for us.
Is there any way to know what's their accuracy rate been to date?
I haven't seen any statistics
I haven't seen any statistics on that part. But one of the things that I think, and I think I said this last week, the news media needs to do a better job. And I think Syria is giving them an opportunity to do that, mm-hmm. a better job of being transparent about where they're getting their information from and the fact that it may or may not be credible. But they're working to try to find out whether or not what you're seeing on the air is exactly what the way in which they're describing it and they're providing the proper context.
So you bring up this transparency. What kind of a risk is there to a news organization that partners with somebody like Storyful or is paying them to do the verification? What happens with the idea of outsourcing verification? Is that a healthy thing for a news organization to be doing?
Well, news organizations have been doing that for a long time. I mean, when you hire a freelancer to go out and do that work, that person is on contract and you're hoping that they're going to be providing you with that information. And the best that you can do is to try to verify it through other means before you put it on the air or put it in your publication.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at also news organizations that are partners with Reuters or AP or whatever. It's not their employees who are out there. And we've seen situations like in Lebanon a few years ago where a photographer fakes a shot. That was a professional photographer employed by a news agency. So I don't think third party versus traditional news organizations really matters that much. It's the credibility of the individual actors.
Right, and being transparent about where you got that information and what you know about where that and what you know about the context in which that information was gathered.
There's a video explainer on the Links blog produced by Storyful that describes its verification process. It might be worth watching, not only for those of you in our audience, but maybe for some producers, reporters, and anchors with some of our national and local media. Last week, this video of a woman twerking, doing that same dance move Miley Cyrus did at the VMAs, got more than 9 million views on YouTube and showed up on newscasts across the country. She's suggestively moving her hips, doing a handstand against a door when her roommate walks in, knocking her over onto a coffee table covered in lit candles. You can guess what happens next. Her yoga pants catch on fire. That's where the video ends pretty abruptly. Well, Monday night, Jimmy Kimmel came clean on his late night program, telling the audience the video was a hoax. He showed the director's cut in which he, Kimmel himself, bursts into the room with a fire extinguisher to put out the flames. The dancer was really stuntwoman Daphne Avalon, and she was sworn to secrecy that Kimmel was producing it, he said, to put on YouTube and just see what happened.
And even though the video was fake, that did not stop hundreds of news outlets from showing it. Some people even blamed Miley Cyrus as if this was her fault. But this is just a sampling of some of the many, many media outlets who fell for our little prank.
For this segment, we thought we just had to trot out this video because apparently it's everywhere.
The first time I saw a viral video, 2 million views. It now has 8 million. The girl in this video was trying to make a sexy twerk video for her boyfriend.
Check out this twerker. Girl on fire.
Watch how a twerking girl literally sets herself on fire.
She catches on fire. That girl was on fire.
Now the internet is on fire.
Dangerous side effect of the fad known as twerking.
Apparently twerking or just trying to do it is getting downright dangerous.
So this is a major twerking fail.
Some are calling it the world's biggest twerking fail.
This could be the most disastrous attempt at twerking of all time.
This is an example of how not to twerk.
This girl's foray into twerking ended in near disaster.
So we're sitting here, admittedly, the three of us giggling as we're watching this, but maybe it's not so funny. What does this say about the state of television news, of journalism, that Jimmy Kimmel was able to pull this over on our industry?
There are some people who are critical of Kimmel, and I suppose maybe he shouldn't be contributing to the hoaxing of the media. I don't have a lot of outrage for him. I think I'm just kind of bemused because this happens on television news so much. It used to be, as one of the writers pointed out in a post you've got on our blog, that we run these kickers at the end, as we call them at the end of newscasts. Cat's doing this, or some happy story or funny story, and we've done it forever and ever. Well, now viral videos are the new kicker because they're easy to find. They have high entertainment value. And we write if you listen to those pieces, some writer was basically going from a common script almost. I mean, they all use the same language, the same inflection, the same. It's just boring. And you wonder why the public doesn't, have as much, put as much credibility in TV news anymore, is because even on silly things, we have such a cookie cutter formula that there's really no way of discerning one outlet from another.
It sort of feeds into the voyeuristic aspects of human nature. Mm-hmm. And at the end of newscasts, we sort of want to lighten things up. And this allows us to do that. The only problem with that is, and this sort of goes back to what the segment we just left and talking about being transparent. You're transparent in that it's a viral video and it came off of YouTube, but that's all you know. Mm-hmm. And when these kinds of things could get out there and then and then you have comedians that will basically make this stuff up. I mean, this is going to happen more and more often. So now you're going to have to spend a lot of time as someone who's putting together a newscast trying to figure out whether or not this is actually true.
Well, and there was another one even within the last 24 hours that we talked about in the reporting class that I teach this morning about a guy who was reportedly coming out of surgery, being cared for by somebody he thought was a nurse in a recovery room, and finding out that he's actually married to her. It's his wife of 6 years, and he just didn't realize it. And now there's speculation that perhaps that one is not real. Yet the first time I saw that one was on the Today Show yesterday morning, less than 12 hours after Kimmel kind of put out there what he had just pulled.
And, you know, I've got to say, I think that if somebody else had produced this fake video, let's say David Letterman or Jon Stewart or somebody else had produced it and put it out there on the sly, if Kimmel thought it was funny, he would have just as easily run it on his program without checking to see whether it was true or false.
That's true. I mean, you know, when you look at what Jon Stewart does, he does a lot of the same things, mm-hmm. but they're on more substantive issues. Kimmel just decided to do it on this, and then the whole Miley Cyrus thing comes up, and he's like, oh,
and that timing was just coincidental.
Oh, yeah.
Kimmel said this was produced 2 months ago.
Exactly. So, but the fact that it was out there and then Miley Cyrus comes in, it just brings it out into the wider audience, and then the media, and then the news media picks it up and puts it in their kickers, and there you go.
Well, our loyal listeners who have an appetite for media criticism now have a new Sunday morning outlet for that. This week, Fox News Channel debuted its new program, Media Buzz.
First, a few words about this program. We are going to hold the media accountable in a fair, aggressive, and unbiased way. We'll look at the way stories are covered and framed, sometimes hyped, sometimes ignored. And we won't be shy about calling people out for mistakes, conflict, sensationalism, or acknowledging our own errors when they happen. We'll also serve as a guide to cut through all the static and the finger-pointing and help focus on the facts. And we're going to have some fun in the process.
Host Howard Kurtz might look familiar from CNN's Reliable Sources, a show he hosted until June when he left for Fox News Channel. Now the two shows compete directly, airing at the same time, 10 o'clock, here in mid-Missouri. This show, Kurtz says, will be upbeat, fast-paced, and promises to hold its writers, producers, guests, and, well, even Kurtz himself, accountable to the same standards of those that it criticizes. What do you guys think? Can these two shows compete?
Yeah, I mean, I won't say that there's a select audience, but there's a small audience for both shows. And any of us who want to watch them both are probably DVR one and watch the other one live or whatever. So there's probably room for both of them. I think it's kind of ironic, though, that here's Howard Kurtz, who was deposed from his job at the Daily Beast and Newsweek and probably had something to do with him leaving CNN because of a controversy over Lauren Ashburn, who's now going to be a featured player on his new Fox show. So it's kind of like he's rubbing everybody's nose in that. And I like Howard Kurtz. I think that despite the few of the mistakes he's made, he's done a good job of holding the media and being fair about that. If Fox will allow him to continue to do that, good for him.
I think that's going to be the question. Will Fox allow him to continue to do that? Because one of the things that I liked about what Howard Kurtz did was he basically brought up the faux pas of all the media, including CNN, when he was on CNN. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very interesting to see whether or not Fox is going to allow him to do that same thing there, because they are real touchy about anyone who criticizes them.
Well, one of the things that he's trying to incorporate is a little bit more social media and asking people to tweet live into the show, wanting to create a little bit more of an egalitarian approach. We'll see how that works out. Like always, we're out of time before things that we are out of to talk about, but we want to keep our approach egalitarian too. So if you have a comment or a question for us, we've got a couple of ways you can get in contact. Stop by our links blog where you can leave remarks, read more about the topics we've discussed, and see extended video clips. You can also drop us an email at views@kbia.org. Thanks for spending the last half hour with us, and a special thank you to RJI's Travis McMillan. He directs our show, and to KBIA's Pat Akers, who's handling the audio. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us next week for another edition of Views of the News.